Welcome to the Sourdough Speak, the University of Alaska Broadcasting Services, in cooperation with Alaska Communication Arts, brings you this series of discussions about the history and development of the Great Valleys of Interior Alaska, the Yukon and the Tanana, and the city of Fairbanks, which developed with the coming of miners during the Great Gold Stampede at the turn of the century. In this series, the Sourdough Speak, pioneer Alaskans tell you their stories about their lives as they saw and played a part in the unfolding story of Alaskan growth. Now here is your host for this series, Neville Jacobs.
Perhaps every occupation has its heroes that are sung about and its unsung heroes. In aviation, this is especially true, where you hear about the exploits of pilots, but seldom about the men who keep the airplanes operating, the indispensable aircraft mechanics. An Alaskan pioneer who is known as one of the best in the business is Jim Hutcheson. Hutch originally came to Alaska with the Army in 1919 from his home state, Pennsylvania. Hutch met his wife at Valdez, and after his discharge, the family moved to Fairbanks in the early 20s. Hutch went to work for the Fairbanks Exploration Company, but he didn't stay with the mining business. He was fascinated with airplanes, and at the first chance went to work for an airline. It was the airline that Carl Ben Eielson had started, and this was in the same year that Eielson, pioneer aviator, was killed in Siberia, 1929. To begin, we asked Hutch how he first met Carl Ben Eielson.
Oh, I met him in Fairbanks. I played basketball with him. He was teaching in the school, you know, and the Fairbanks basketball team didn't have too many good players, young fellows. And the city, the team I played for, was old experienced players about 25, 30 years old. So we decided that old Ben could play for the high school, and he was terrific, just terrific. And they won more games because of him than anybody else. He learned to fly. He was a flyer, of course, and he bought this airplane and come in, and then he bought all these deals and hired different fellows to work for him. And his mechanic, chief mechanic of the outfit, was Tom Girard, was a pilot and a good mechanic. So Ben hired him to ramrod this deal, chief mechanic. So I had been doing some work around the airplanes, and he hired me to work for Alaska Airways, which is Ben's outfit. 1929, I quit the FE company. Wow. But anyway, he hired me to go to work, and I loved this fiddling around with the airplane so much that I did. And went along, and of course he got lost, Ben did. Noel went outside, Ben had to fly the Hamilton, which he had never flown before. It was a bigger airplane at that time, you know. It had a Cyclone, yeah. 575 engine, big thing. And I was one of the ones, we strapped the skis on the struts of the airplane, and he took a school teacher and all her books and all her stuff to Nolato, and he landed on a bar at Nolato, run wheels, then he went on to Keller. And they put the skis on, and they flew over to Siberia on this first trip. And he found out on this first trip that he didn't need skis. The skis were heavy, real heavy. Mm-hmm. And lots of ice, you know, open ice over there. So when he came back from the first trip to Teller, he took the skis off and put wheels on. And then him and Dorbant were fiddling around there and Keller, and Dorbant kind of egged him on to fly, and well, he took the challenge, old Ben challenged, Dorbant, and Dorbant flew for an hour and come back, and Ben kept going, see? So, there he was, out there in the tules, the weather was bad, And he missed by 75 feet, believe it or not. Just 75 feet. There was a little rise from this 15-mile bay that he was heading for, that he could have landed on real easy with wheels. And in this bank, he hit the top of that hill. Just 75 feet from the ice, he couldn't see, you know. But he knew the bay was there and everything, so that's where he was headed for.
Well, Hutch, you were on a search for him yourself.
Yeah, well, after Gillum and Cross and left Fairbanks to go over to Siberia, Gillum busted up his steerman over there, knocked Leninger off. Well, he sent for the welder and the necessary pieces to fix it. So Pat Reed, they'd set this bunch of Canadians in on the search. There was a whole slug of them. Nobody knew the way to Nome, so they got Matt Niemann from Anchorage to fly a Fairchild and lead us into Nome. Pat Reed and Pat and Ed Young were supposed to fly the ship that Matt Niemann flew to Anchorage, to Nome, because Niemann had just got married. And he'd left his wife, he'd only been married a day or so. Well, you can imagine that. See? Well, he said, I'll take him over there and I'll come right back. Okay. So Ed Young was in Keller, or Nome, and he was supposed to pick the airplane up and continue on over to the search, see? So the two planes took off from Fairbanks. Matt Niemann was flying one with Major Deckard, Sam McCauley. He was an airplane mechanic, the engine mechanic. And on our airplane was Pat Reed, Bill Hughes, and myself. And I was going over to fix Gillum's airplane, which is busted. He busted his steerman up. He knocked the landing gear off. Okay, well, I had all the tubing, everything I needed to fix the landing gear with, but no tanks, no oxygen tank, no settling tank. So we're flying along. We went by New Lado, down the river, by New Lado, and into this big snowstorm. Well, Niemann turned around and went back, and I hollered at Pat. I said, hey, I said, the other airplane's going backwards. The other way. Well, he went right around this peak and went right down, landed in this canyon. And he knocked off 5 foot of the wing when we hit. He made a pontoon landing, which, you know, them guys fly high up. We went scooting along and we hit this bluff in the canyon, knocked 5 feet of the wing off. And we're snowing to beat the band. So we jumped, he went through an overflow with the ski and up on a bar, shut everything off. We jumped out, Bill Hughes and I. And we run back and we picked up all these busted pieces of the airplane. You know, the wing, the spars, and all the junk that was laying up here about 200 yards. And it was snowing so bad that by the time we got up to where he hit, my gosh, it was covered up with snow. You have to kick it out, see?
Was that up in that ladder river somewhere?
No, that was the Ungolic.
That was on the Ungolic River.
Ungolic River, right behind Uticlete. 4,000-foot peak. Think of it. And here we are down in the canyon. Hell of a spot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were there about the third day. We were settling around trying to fix this wing. And I heard dogs barking. And so did Bill, Bill Hughes. Well, listen, you know, sure enough. And here come two dog teams. Well, they were out trapping way up in that Ungolic River. So I said to Pat, by golly, here's our opportunity. We'll just write a message, turn these birds around, send them back to wherever they come from, and let them know we're up here. No, not necessary at all. We'll be out of here in no time. So we got out, fixed the wing, patched up the wing, threw it out. 1 week, and we landed at New Lado, or at Uniclete, 40 miles. We were 40 miles from Uniclete, back in the hills. So we landed there and stayed 4 days, and then flew on to Nome, took the wing off, took it into one of their sheds up there, and spliced the spar and repaired the whole thing, and then Pat flew on to Nome, and I stayed in Nome, see, because Gillum had picked up some pipes and pieces and patched his landing gear. You know, Gillum, he was quite a guy, wonderful guy. But he patched it and flew it back, see. I got stuck in Nome then for a month and a half after I got up there with this wrecked airplane, and we got it fixed, and Pat went on to over to Siberia. They left me in Nome to work on the airplane because Gillum had fixed his airplane, the one that I was going to fix, so he didn't need me over there. So I come back to town, and in the meantime, Pat Reed cracked his airplane up again. He thought he was flying gasoline and food up to the boat in Nanuk, and he went over where the wreck was, which was 90 miles east from the Nanuk, and they had a big fire going, big celebration of some kind, you know, the Russians, and he thought that they had found the body. So he went in and landed alongside the fire, and it was rough in the cob. He knocked the landing gear off, he busted the windshield, and bent the prop, knocked the cylinder off, that 71, and they sent a guy by the name of Herb Larson over there. And this Herb Larson worked for Alaska Airways when I did. They sent him over there to fix it. Well, he got over there and he found out that he needed the welder. So they sent for me. So I went over. That's how I happened to get over there.
Hutch patched up Pat Reed's airplane, so it was able to be flown out, but Hutch was stranded 8 days in Siberia by bad weather. With the crew of the Nanuk, he visited and feasted in the nearby Eskimo village at North Cape, but Hutch was glad finally to get back to Alaska. Little has been told about Dorvant, the man who was working with Eielson, flying the other airplane when they were at Kelly, the one who challenged Eielson to make the flight to Siberia, then turned back himself, while Eielson went on. We asked Hutch what happened to Dorvant.
He did something to his arm or something, and then he got pneumonia here in Fairbanks and died right in Fairbanks. Yeah, I think he's buried right here. Mm. I think he is. You know, I had quite a trip with that guy. This is quite a story. You know, he was flying Judge Clegg and Miss Parcher, which is his secretary, on a trip to McGrath and down the Kuskokwim. And he was flying a Stinson Detroiter. And he cracked it up at McGrath. He wired in on the radio, you know, he had this trouble. And so Charlie Thompson says to me, he said, get your stuff together. You got to get on and fix this airplane. And he said, I got Barnhill to take me down. And we had a standard D-25. I got in, away we went. And went flying along, and pretty quick I noticed the snow, you know, coming down. Pretty quick we're right down on the river and falling around. We landed on the South Fork at the Kuskokwim, that little roadhouse there. We stayed the night. I put sticks under the skis and drained the oil. I did all the work, you know, covered up this and that and the other thing. And Barnhill took off for the roadhouse. The little roadhouse, this little thing. We spent the night. Next day, we got into McGrath, and Dorvant was standing there, and he said, Judge Clegg and Miss Parcher want to go on to Flap, I think, to Flap. And he said, I'll take them down. You can stay here and fly this other machine back. Well, old Judge Clegg wouldn't fly with him, with Dorvant. So Barnhill had to take Judge Clegg and Miss Parcher and the Standard, and he took them on. So Dorvant and I stayed there. Well, I got to looking around the airplane. He knocked the landing gear off. So I welded the fittings on and fixed a little few little things, and I said, "Now this is all wrong with it." He said, "Yeah." So I raised the cowling, and he had knocked the carburetor off, and the carburetor was laying right back against the firewall. He broke the throat off of the 220 white. Well, here I am, no aluminum welding rod, nothing. Well, I could fix it if I had the rod, you know. So I fiddled around a while, and I took this part off. It's three pieces. It's the intake from the carburetor to a 220 right. This way, and the oil goes down through it to heat gas. See? So I took it off, took it up into a place there, and looked at it, and I went across the river. Well, the old town is across the river from where it is now. So I went over where it is now. There's one guy living over there, and he had an outboard motor, an old one. And he had a few aluminum pieces, see? So I got some pieces off of them, melted them, made welding rod. I welded this piece together, fixed up that thing, and old Dorvance and I flew it back to Fairbanks. And he said, "You can't do it," see? Well, I had no flux, no nothing, but I puddled it with a stick. You can puddle aluminum with a stick, you know. And I did that.
It's easy to speak in cliches about the resourcefulness and ingenuity of those who pioneer in Alaska's wilderness, but those qualities are in great demand across the land that stretches unbroken for hundreds of miles in some areas, and where materials and parts are often impossible to acquire. Hutch tells of another time he repaired an airplane when others said it couldn't be done. This was Frank Pollock's airplane at Joe Village.
Frank, he was taking off here. He took off from Fairbanks. He had a...
Frank who?
Pollock. I was working for Pollock Airlines and Pollock Airways. And he was a nice guy. Everybody liked Frank. So he was starting for Chicken. He had this gal, and she had a baby, was about 10 days old, maybe. And over Joe Village, he had his engine swallowed a busted his rod, had his lionite rod, and he monkeyed around. He went down Joe Village, was just a little stretch, and he got on the last part of it. When he got down in the valley, the wind changed. He got on his tail, and went over most of the field, and he cocked her up on her side, and he hit on his wing, on his side, and he never woke the baby up even. But he busted the airplane all to smithereens. The left wing, the engine, the prop, the gear, and it broke it all to pieces. Well, he didn't get the Chicken, so they sent an airplane. They knew he wouldn't be off course too far. They found him there at Joe Village, and Bob Bosley went in and picked him up. Bob, who was now a captain, I think, for Northwest, used to be anyway. So they brought him in, and he took Norm Weaver, who was his chief mechanic then, over to look at it. And Norm said he couldn't fix it. Too bad. Wing was all crumpled up, you know, and bent. So they took the tank out and took all the wires and the flap and the aileron and cables, wiring, stripped her and showed her off in the brush. Well, Frank wasn't just too happy about this. He thought maybe it could be fixed. Took me over. Now, this don't reflect on Norm, didn't think it. He was a good mechanic. So he took me over. I looked at it, sized it up, and I fixed it up enough so that he could fly the airplane back to Fairbanks. Okay, so we come back, piece together. I got all 8 or 10 pieces of quarter inch tubing, steel tubing together. And I got some rug and rope, and so we didn't have an electric outfit, generator. And he took Lissy's boy, I tell you, it ain't nothing. Just nothing. And he took a guy by the name of Johnson with me, just a young fellow. We went out there and we patched the wing down, and then he decided that I'd been out there long enough. He brought me back, took Tillman out. You ever hear of Tillman? You've heard of him. Hornton School here. Well, they took Cleve Smith, and they covered it. Then we went out, then they brought them back, and we got the engine parts, and they couldn't pack the whole engine in, so just some pieces, and Tillman and I put it together, put the landing gear on, put the prop on, the engine together, put it in, cranked it up and run it, and Frank came in and flew that airplane out, and Bob Osley threw Tillman out with a Stinson. And I was sitting there all by myself, and I was thought, well, shucks, I'm going fishing. Another creek right here. The Joe Village is on a creek, you know, and I get my pole ready, and I heard an airplane coming. I could hear them. And here come Frank Pollock back with a Blanca, big one. He was so tickled, he flew that Stinson out and got it to Fairbanks. He said he flew it hands off, just beautiful. And he was so tickled, he came back with it, and he said, I'm going to take you out. He took all my stuff, away he went, flew out.
Another incident took place when the radar network known as the Distant Early Warning Site, or the Dew Line, was being constructed along the Arctic coast. Hutch worked then, as now, for Interior Airways, who was the contract airline providing air service to the Dew Line sites. Hutch and a fellow mechanic, Cy Hetherington, went up to one of the sites to see what they could do about a damaged aircraft there.
We had this Stinson. They called it the Spirit. And it's sitting right now in Alaska land. That Stinson. So there was a guy cracked it up there at Bar A on the Dew Line, knocked the gear off, and bent the prop, and there it sits. So Cy says, well, we got to go up and fix it. So I got some stuff together, you know, and we got a truss. You know, the whole thing, see? They said they ripped the whole middle of the airplane out. Well, when we got up there, all they had done, at the weld, had pulled off of the side of the airplane. This outrigger, it wasn't welded yet. It just pulled off, see? So, but they broke the leg in two, the landing leg, it come down this way. You know, Stinson, they broke it right in two. So we got there and I looked the thing over and I said, oh shucks, this is easy. Cy says, oh, you can't fix this thing. So I broke the pieces. Well, I said, we gotta try, that's what they sent us here for. But the truss wouldn't fit, it was for a different airplane. But anyway, we didn't need it, so I welded the piece back on with about 30 below. Wind blowing, geez, it was nasty there. And we put up a barrier, you know, canvas, had a Herman Elson going, make it a little warm, and I welded all this steel back on. And then I, in the shop, I took the landing leg, and I sent the barrel, and Bumbaugh was the chief mechanic at Barrow then. You remember when he came in?
Mm-hmm.
You remember Norm Coles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Norm was working there. So Bumbaugh sent this piece of steel down I wanted. 4130, you know, 1/8 thick, about 2 foot square. He sent it down, and I patched up the landing leg, made it all nice, put everything together. We straightened the prop, and I didn't know that Cy was a pilot. He said, sure, I can fly this thing. Well, he showed me his license then. I said, okay. So we fired up the thing, and he flew us back to Barrow. And that was one of the things that I think is a real good deal, because we packed this thing up from nothing.
Of course, Hutch didn't fix up every airplane that ran into trouble. This story he tells is about an early-day pilot, Fred Mahler.
He was a flying prospector, they called him. So he came in to, I was stuck at on the Kobuk with Harry Brown for about 8 days. And in the meantime, Freddie come flying in there with his Waco. And he landed. He had a prospector with him. He landed, and He taxied across the river, and I helped him tie his airplane down, drain the water out of it, get everything, oil, get it all tied down, you know, up against the bank for the night. He came into the village there at Kobach, and he bought $5 worth of candy for the native kids, passed it around. And the next day, I went down and helped him warm up, get ready to go. And in the meantime, there's a Half Moon Lake in behind Kobach. Well, he had landed on the river. So across the river, I had laid out a field for Robbie to come in. Because the lake, something happened out there. It got either no snow on or too much snow or something. So I took sticks and put flags on it, you know, bought some red cloth and tied them on the sticks and cleaned all the boulders and everything off. And so Freddie got started and he taxied over, and I told him now, there's a lot of sticks and rocks and stuff on this barn. You'd be careful, see? Okay, so he taxied down to the end. I turned him around, grabbed the whole lower wing, turned him around, got him lined up, see? He's so small, he's just a little bit of a guy. And he couldn't see out of the cockpit, and he ducked his head, opened the throttle, and he went right into one of my stakes. And he busted the prop. Broke the prop, see? While he tried to taxi with his busted prop, and couldn't do it. The motor was about to shake out of the airplane. I told him, cut it, see? And he looked at me and cut the engine. We pushed it across the river and took the prop off. And it was an Englishman living at the Kobach, at Chungnak that time. And him and Freddie, they spliced a piece of wood on that prop, put a piece of tin around this end, a piece of tin around this end, balanced it, and he flew that thing back to Fairbanks.
Yes, to fly and to keep flying in Alaska's bush requires unusual ingenuity, resourcefulness. To find new ways to make things work when normal supplies are not available, when conditions themselves are not what most people call normal. Today's broadcast has given us a look at that side of Alaskan aviation that people seldom see, the viewpoint of the aircraft mechanic, the man who keeps the airplanes flying. Our guest has been Jim Hutchison, known throughout Alaska as an unusually skilled aircraft mechanic. This is Neville Jacobs, your host and producer of The Sourdough Speak. We hope you have enjoyed this interview, one of a series of talks with Alaskan pioneers.
You have been listening to The Sourdough Speak, a series of discussions about the history and development of interior Alaska in taped interviews with pioneer Alaskans. The Sourdough Speak was produced by Alaska Communication Arts in conjunction with the University of Alaska Broadcasting Services.